Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Rural Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Albrick with Ag Country Farm Credit Services, and I'm excited to talk about a topic today that is near and dear to the hearts of many Americans, and that is bacon. October is Pork Month, and who better to chat with about this subject than David Preisler, who is CEO of the Minnesota Pork Producers Association. Welcome, David.
It's great to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
First things first, do you eat bacon every day for breakfast?
Not every day, but I would guess that I've never gone a week without it, whether it's at breakfast, lunch, or dinner, but not every day. Obviously, we'd love if folks have it as often as they can, and the demand is fantastic for the product.
Well, Americans are certainly enjoying it, and let's start here. Within the last 10 years, we've really seen an increase in popularity among bacon. Why do you think that is?
I think part of it is, and probably the biggest part, is one very simple thing, and that's just plain taste. And so it's got some fat to it, it's got some salt to it, depending on the kind of bacon that you're getting, and kind of that smokiness that comes with it. And so it's really more of like a comfort food, and people are putting it in anything and everything. We've got really tremendous demand for bacon. You know, it really wasn't that long ago, and we were struggling for what to do with that pork belly, you know, which turns into bacon. And now, quite honestly, we can't literally produce enough. And so I think, again, it's more that comfort food, but more than anything, it's just all about taste.
It's almost become cultural. We're seeing bacon t-shirts and clothing products. There's even bacon-scented candles and so on. What does this craze do for your industry?
You know, I think the biggest thing is it certainly does put a lot of value onto that pig. And so if we look at, you know, for most of this past summer and into the fall, the belly, where bacon comes from, was the highest priced cut on the pig. And so the different cuts, so whether it's loin, you know, ribs, ham, the shoulder, you know, they're all priced differently. And so if we have high prices for certain cuts, that tends to just bring up the total value. And so right now, the belly is the second highest priced cut on the pig. The highest are the ribs, which again kind of brings into the whole flavor thing and kind of comfort food. But it's just one of those things that it just adds an awful lot of value to that hog carcass, and in turn that gets returned back to the farmer. And that makes a difference for us.
Now let's say there's people out there who haven't enjoyed the delicious taste of bacon or any other cuts. What's your sales pitch to them to get them to look into this tasty meat?
Boy, good question. You know, there's a little bit of a joke that out there that, you know, that bacon is kind of an entry drug into meat for people that are vegetarians, you know, or vegans. But, you know, I think, again, it just comes back into taste. You know, every once in a while you'll meet that person that says, boy, I just don't like bacon. But I'd say that's a pretty small percentage of the population. And I think the other thing is there's so many different kinds of flavors now too. You know, it used to be you just have kind of smoked bacon, you know, and now you've got chipotle raspberry, and you've got maple, and you've got all sorts of other things. And it's also used not just necessarily for breakfast anymore, but it's also an ingredient. You know, so whether you see it in salads or you see it something wrapped in bacon, it's an ingredient and not just the main piece too, and we're fine with all of the above.
Now, there's no question that the pork industry is big business here in Minnesota. You make up over one-third of the state's livestock industry. You're number two nationally in pigs raised and in the value of pigs. And that's all done by about 3,300 farmers around the state. Could you expand upon these statistics and give the audience a better sense of what hog farming is like here?
Well, I think the thing that I think is really different in Minnesota compared to many other parts of the U.S. is that, you know, with those over 3,000 families that are raising pigs, it's all Minnesota families. So whether the farms are large, small, or medium, you know, those farms are all based here in Minnesota, and so the dollars stay here. And I think that's probably one of the best stories from a rural economic development standpoint, is the dollars turn in these local communities, and they stay here. So they're not going off to New York City or somewhere else. I mean, these are family-owned businesses, and those families live here, spend their money here, send their kids to school here. And I think that's the other thing that we really just don't appreciate necessarily as much when we look at livestock production, is it takes people. So whether you're milking cows or whether you're caring for pigs, it takes people out in these rural communities to do that. So whether it's the owners of the farms or the employees that they have working with them on a daily basis, that's, I think, the real success story. You know, we've got a lot of, you know, small communities that have kind of struggled, you know, over recent years. And boy, if you put an infusion of livestock production within those areas, it brings people along with it. And they're good paying jobs and with benefits and so on. And so I think that's the biggest thing is, you know what, we've got, it's a homegrown industry. The money stays here and it's really a benefit to rural communities.
We went over a little bit of the consumption trends. We went over a little bit of the statistics in terms of how valuable this industry is. But looking at it as a whole here in the state, what's the health of the Minnesota pork industry?
I'd say it's really healthy, and for a number of reasons. One is if we look at over time, I'd say we've had pretty sustainable growth. So no like huge spurts of growth, but just pretty steady growth year over year over year. And that's been really for probably about the last 15 to 20 years. Now, actually, though, the last Hog and Pig report did show a downturn in our sow numbers here in Minnesota, probably a little bit steeper than what we anticipated or quite honestly even think may be accurate. We'll see if that trend kind of continues. You know, but we've got a number of things that just really are in our favor. Okay, we've got the feed grains that are raised here. We have feed mills that, you know, in all of southern and west central Minnesota that know how to feed pigs. And we really have also have the human side of things. So whether it's veterinarians, consultants, the farmers themselves, that really bring that human capital piece to it. And they're really good at raising pigs. So one of the things that we also look at, you know, along with kind of gross numbers of production, is how are we doing from a production efficiency standpoint? You know, so whether it's, you know, pigs per sow and some of the other efficiencies that are out there that really help to add to that bottom line profitability. And Minnesota consistently ranks kind of in that top five in the U.S. And they'll kind of jockey around somewhere in that top five. But from an efficiency standpoint, you know, we're really good. And the farmers that are out here are really, really good at what they do. And I think that's been just a real key from a standpoint of why Minnesota has been successful and is going to help, I think, make us successful down the road.
Now, as mentioned earlier, October is National Pork Month, or as one of my favorite classifications, Porktober. How is your association celebrating this?
You know, it's an annual thing that's been around for a long time. And kind of the origins of it is it tends to be that this is the time of year where we end up having the most pork that's available on the marketplace. You know, so it was really established from a standpoint of, all right, we know we've got a lot of supply coming to the marketplace. And so, you know, let's make sure that we're promoting it and trying to move that supply. You know, over time, we still do have, you know, more supplies that do come into the fall, but it has not been as pronounced as it was, for example, 20 years ago or 25 years ago. But as far as things that we do here, first of all, we look at kind of every month as pork month. But as we look at here in October, we've got a number of things that we'll do, especially locally. And so, you know, putting some ads out that will just kind of remind people of the economic importance to the pork industry here in Minnesota. And we've got a number of other activities that we're doing. We've got sponsoring some marathons. We got one here in Mankato. I think a lot of it is just kind of raising awareness again and just reminding people, hey, you know, the pork industry's here. We're good for rural communities. And the product is really great. And people have got really good demand for that product.
We are speaking with David Preisler, CEO of the Minnesota Pork Producers Association. David, what are some of the industry trends you're seeing both here in this state and nationally?
You know, I'd say the biggest trend would be where we are going and where we have come from a standpoint of exporting pork. So in 1995, the United States was not even self-sufficient from a standpoint of pork production, which means we were eating everything we were producing, plus we had to import pork from other countries in order to satisfy our domestic needs. Today, we're exporting about 28% of all the pork we produce in the U.S. And those leading destinations as far as exports are, from a volume standpoint, are number one is Mexico, number two would be Japan, and then we've got an awful lot of pork that goes to Canada, to Korea, to China, Hong Kong. So now we're getting a little more diversified to where we're moving a lot of pork now into Central America and also into places like Colombia. And so we're trying to diversify that portfolio. And so with exports, you know, brings a tremendous amount of opportunity, because that's, you know, there's most all of the consumers in the world are not here in the United States. And we have an awful lot of economies in the rest of the world, especially the pork-eating cultures, that are much, much better than they've ever been. And so when people have that disposable income, they want to invest it in meat. And that's part of why we've seen just really tremendous, tremendous growth in places like Mexico. The growth we've seen there, if we look in the last 3 years, per capita consumption of pork in Mexico has gone up 7 pounds a person. We've never seen that kind of growth here in the U.S. ever. And so, you know, we're excited about some of those opportunities from an export standpoint.
And we've seen President Trump pull out of the TPP, for example. And now the U.S. is currently renegotiating NAFTA with Canada and Mexico. How closely are you watching these proceedings, and what are your general feelings towards these trade deals?
So first of all, on our general feelings on trade deals, we have never had a trade deal that we did not like and did not benefit from. And the biggest reason is that the U.S., and specifically the upper Midwest, were low-cost producers in the world. And not only low cost, but also of real high quality and the highest and best food safety in the world. So when you combine those three things up, it puts you in a pretty good position to export, because people want safe food, they want quality food, and they want it at an affordable price. And we're the place that can do that in the world. As far as, you know, looking at, are we concerned about NAFTA and how often are we watching it? I would say about every 60 seconds we're watching it. NAFTA is of incredible importance. You know, if we look at Mexico, just in itself, about 11% of all the pork we produce in the U.S. gets exported to Mexico. Without NAFTA, we would have duties or tariffs that would go on U.S. pork that would go into Mexico, and really, in the end, would make us completely non-competitive. You know, we were disappointed that TPP didn't go anywhere. We're hopeful, though, that maybe some bilateral agreements, specifically with Japan, to give us even more access there. We've got decent access today, but we could get more, that some of that can come forward. But I'd say, yes, we're very concerned about it. Actually, was at a meeting here with the Canadian consulate in Minneapolis and talking about how we can not have NAFTA blow up, because it's a big, big advantage for our industry. And really, the important part of that comes back to, again, rural communities. You know, if we lose export markets, then we lose that infusion of cash that's coming back into our rural communities. And I don't think anybody wants that.
Now, outside of trade, are you hearing from any of your members about any other roadblocks within the industry?
One of the other pieces that we've started to have more conversations with our folks in Washington, D.C. about, so our senators and representatives, is looking at labor. You know, if we look at southern Minnesota, western Minnesota, even up into northwestern Minnesota, we've got tremendously low rates of unemployment. Many areas that are sub 3% of unemployment. You know, and part of it is just demographics. You know, our kind of traditional German and Norwegian families aren't having 5, 6, 7, 8 kids like they used to. And so, you know, it used to be we'd have that demographic trend would give us plenty of people to be out in rural communities, and that's just not the case anymore. And so we need to have a more reliable source of labor. And so whether that comes in the form of redoing some of the visa programs that are out there, or having people move from other parts of the country to here to supply that labor, that's a big deal for us. And it could be a real limiting factor. And not only for hog farms, but for all farms. And we're hearing that from others too. We're hopeful that there maybe could be some things done from a federal level to open up a more workable work visa program for agricultural workers. You know, our traditional visa programs don't work real well for livestock farms because they're only seasonal in nature. And so they work fine for someone that's got a crop farm or a fruit or vegetables or that sort of thing. But it doesn't work well for a dairy or hog farm when someone needs to be there every day. And so I'd say that's another one that if we're looking, you know, not only immediately, but long term, you know, we need to have really good people. We pay well, we provide good benefits, but we just need to have access to more people to come out here and help raise pigs.
Is your organization and the pork industry in general doing anything to educate the general public, especially given that people are becoming further and further removed from the farm?
You know, we've made a big move if we look at how we've invested, especially checkoff dollars, to pivot more towards promoting the industry, promoting the farmers that are actually out there every day doing the work and what they do within their communities and so how they do things, why they do things, and again, how important it is to these rural communities, along with promoting the product. But we have made quite a pivot from taking funds that we traditionally had used to promote the product and move that over to really promoting pork production and kind of, again, doing the hows and whys and wheres and so on. And I think part of it is that, yes, we do have a population that is much, much more removed from food production. And we're also in an age of just absolutely instant information, and people want to know more things about more things. And so we're definitely headed that direction. We have been for quite a while, and I don't see that changing. You know, transparency is important, and we're all about that. We do have a little bit of a challenge from a standpoint of if we look at allowing people onto farms to see them and touch them and so on and experience it, because biosecurity is really, really important to us to keep animals healthy. So we're headed down the road more of using technology to try and bridge that gap. And so I think you're going to see a lot more of that into the future.
And of course, getting the next generation involved in agriculture is a focus of every commodity group. What are you guys doing about this?
You know, there's a number of things. We've put, again, our money where our mouth is in a couple of areas. One is in developing young people. So we've got a highly successful youth education experience that we've put on for the last few years. We'll also be starting something new with a program more for kind of that 25 to 40-year-old segment of farms, of farmers, you know, that are really kind of just starting to take over the reins or come back and try and provide them with some skills and some opportunities and networking to help make sure that they're successful. And then the other thing is just providing other educational kind of experiences out there. We do have an awful lot of young people that have come back to farms because of pork production. And whether it's in an ownership position of the animals or, you know, have a contract finishing barn. I'd argue that contract finishing in Minnesota has helped to start hundreds of young farmers out, because it came with something that they didn't have is money. You know, and they were able to get into that with not very much equity, be able to build equity over time, and then also have that manure to use on cropland that they were farming in order to lower their production cost and to help them be more competitive that way. And so, yeah, I think the whole contract finishing piece has been really important for starting out young farmers. And, you know, and again, as we look at the future, I think the future is extremely bright. We've got the people that are coming back. These are sharp, sharp young people. They've been exposed to lots of things, you know, in the world, bringing those things back to their farms. And I think part of our job is just to help them with tools to be successful.
Where can people go to find out more information about your organization if they're interested?
Sure. The easy one-stop shop is just to go to mnpork.com. And there you can, you know, click on and get links to our Facebook and all of the social media channels along it. But just go again, mnpork.com. And there's all sorts of different things. Whether you want to find out more about the industry here in Minnesota, whether you want to find out more about what goes on farms, and again, just to engage on the social standpoint, we're more than happy to do that with people too.
Well, David, thank you very much for taking some time to speak with us today.
Hey, it's been my pleasure. It's been a lot of fun.
David Preissler, CEO of the Minnesota Pork Producers Association. That's going to do it for us on this episode of the Rural Perspectives Podcast, which is a production of Ag Country Farm Credit Services. To find out more about us, please visit www.agcountry.com.